Thank you and welcome to Youth Unplugged right here on Radio Caribbean International. Of course, I'm your host, aka Money Ron, and I'll be with you for the next hour speaking to an amazing person. And I want to thank her so much for coming in to the program this afternoon. Hi, how are you this afternoon?
Hi, I'm happy to be with you.
pleasure, Shani. Thank you. Of course, you were a guest previously earlier this week on She Speaks with Marine. So it's also my pleasure to have you here because we have so much to talk about. I wanted to start off the interview by introducing myself in French or Spanish, but then I realized with such qualifications that you do, I would be embarrassing myself. So I'm not even going to do that. But Shani, tell us a little bit more about yourself. For those of the people who are listening who may not know of you, and I realized that for some strange reason that the video is stuck, so I hope that everything is okay. We got you back. All right, cool. You're back.
Awesome.
Yeah, you're back. So you heard my introduction. Like I said, I was hoping to speak French or Spanish to you, but I'm not going to embarrass myself. But
okay.
Yeah. Bonjour ou bien good. All right. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Pretty much me, Shan James. I sing, I love languages. I recently graduated from the University of the West Indies. My entire life has been about music, to be honest. Like I was telling Maureen last week, I was pretty much involved in music, not any sports or anything, but I've been involved with music throughout my entire childhood. I played the piano for several years, the violin. I think I played that for about 9 years. And I've been a part of a youth choir for a very long time. So I kept active in my youth.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Now, when we hear people involved in music, synonymous with every Caribbean person, the first thing that comes to your head is, hey, you sing the church? That's the first thing that automatically comes to your head. Is that the case for you?
I wouldn't consider my experience as singing in the church. Yes, I was part of a church choir, but I think when people think about singing in the church, they think of, you know, like the Baptists, like the really powerful voices and chest voice and all of that. I wouldn't characterize my voice as that. I'm more of like a neo soul type of voice, very mellow, very jazzy, with a lot of range, which is also important.
Yeah, very much so. It doesn't limit yourself to one particular genre. But let's talk about schooling, because, you know, we like to go way back. Let's talk about primary school. What were you like in primary school, secondary school? Did you go to A-level? Did you migrate after? You know, all that before we get into the meat, the nana of the conversation.
Right. So I attended the Methodist primary school. At the time, I guess it's still called that. It was called the Gordon Ann Walker Memorial Methodist School. Then I, of course, sat common entrance. I went to the St. Joseph's Convent. After that, I went to A-level, where I also studied French, Spanish, English literature. So, you know, I always had to include my languages somewhere.
True. What sparked that interest in language?
To be honest, I'm not really sure, because I don't know that many multilingual people. I didn't know that many growing up. I think maybe because I used to watch Dora the Explorer as a child.
No, it makes sense, you know. It makes sense. It makes sense. It makes sense.
You know, Dora was that girl, you know?
I know. Donde está Diego?
But I've always been interested in, you know, accents and just language and culture and communication and all of that.
Now, why study languages? Like, why? Why study? Why not just learn it and just, okay, you learn it, you can have basic conversation. What's the advantages of actually doing a degree in these languages? And that's a question I'm really, really curious on.
So when you actually study them, you know, in a formal setting like university, you learn so much more about the culture. And with language learning, that's what's important. You learn to communicate with people better. You're more empathetic towards others, people from other cultures. And that's more or less what it is. It's like an enrichment, not just to learn the language, but also to understand different cultures. Of course, growing up in the Caribbean, we're not necessarily exposed to so many. We might know someone who immigrated from somewhere else, but we're not really exposed to their culture and their language. So that's one of the major takeaways from learning or studying language in a more formal environment.
Cool. And for me personally, when I think of formal languages and actually the application when dealing with it, is it as, you know, easy to communicate somebody? Because you've probably learned the formal aspect there. And for me, if you speak French, like you learn French, and you go to France, it might be different. Or you go to Martinique, it might be different. And you go to some other parts. Are you easily able to relate to everybody who speaks French? I don't know if I'm making sense to you.
I get what you're saying. Okay, so when you learn language, you know, within the education system, they teach you a particular way. So they teach you the formal aspects of the language. So you're talking about the informal, like using dialogue. So they teach you the formal aspects of the language. So you're talking about the informal, like using dialect and all of that when you speak to a native.
Right.
So it's, they don't necessarily teach you that to a certain extent. It's something you learn on your own, whether you watch shows within a particular language, listen to the radio. But the more you learn, you become exposed to so much more. Of course, within the language programs at different institutions, there are opportunities to travel to a specific country. So then you're immersed in the environment and you're able to grasp certain concepts. And, okay, they don't say this that way in Martinique, but they might say it a different way in France. So that's also something you have to be aware of, is that Spanish is the language. However, Latin American Spanish is different to the Spanish spoken in Spain.
Right.
So,
and
when you're
in Spain, or is it Spain or one of the more Latin American countries that you have to speak with a lisp to probably emphasize the it's a lot. Yeah.
So the lisp is Spain for sure.
Okay, all right. I wasn't sure. I just knew one of them.
Now, yeah, so they substitute like the Z with a TH sound. So that's the lisp you're talking about.
Yeah. And there's so much to talk about in such a little bit of space.
Yeah.
So again, this month is celebrated as the Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and you have your own story to talk about. Let's start from the very first, when you found out that you had a tumor and eventually you were diagnosed with cancer. What was the feeling? Let's talk about the emotions, especially at such a young age when you first found that out. What were you dealing with, and how were you able to balance that and your own personal life? Because at that age, you're probably trying to think about your career, what you're going to do next. And that must have created like a huge wall and a block at that point in time. Let's start from the start of that whole experience and walk us through your emotions and how you felt and all these things.
Prior to my diagnosis, I experienced recurring breast tumors. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty much very rare tumors, and not everyone gets them. They account for less than 1% of all breast tumors. So, and they're also characterized by their rapid growth, high risk of recurrence, and they could either be malignant, cancerous, benign, non-cancerous, or borderline. In between, they could go from being benign to becoming malignant. So with that, I think I got them about three times. The first two times, they were not cancerous. But the third time I had it removed, that's when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Now, I think because I experienced them before, I had already underwent like two surgeries. Mm-hmm. I wasn't too perturbed by when the doctor told me that it became cancerous. So I think to a certain extent, I was able to not be completely freaked out by it.
Okay, okay, yeah.
It was also very fast paced. As soon as I got that diagnosis, I had to arrange to have a CT scan done. And then when they did the CT scan, got the results. The results showed that it actually metastasized or spread to my lung. So then I had to do a lung biopsy. So it was very fast paced. I don't think I had time to even process what was happening in my life at the time. But I did also have to maintain, you know, a level head because I needed to let my family know. And I needed them to see that I'm going to be very strong about this. I'm not going to become depressed or, you know, wallow in my sorrows, which I cannot fault anyone for doing that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a natural reaction.
Right, right.
But, you know, again, people are different. So I'm not necessarily a very emotional person. I do have emotion and I do express my emotions. But when it came to that, I needed to be sure that I could show my family and then they could in turn be strong for me.
Yeah, that's pretty well said. And again, I think even a lot of people who are diagnosed, it's probably the depression and the emotions which gets them even sicker.
Yeah.
I mean, apart from your natural personality of not being, you know, someone to wallow in your emotions, how are you able to deal with it, or what things did you do to help you think positive and keep positive throughout the whole process?
Fortunately for me, I started my treatment in Barbados because I was still at school when I got diagnosed. I was in my final semester of my final year at UWE. And again, that was during the initial stages of COVID. So everyone was shutting down. But I was actually able to, my mother came across so she could be with me. I think that definitely helped in a major way because I had her support. Had, you know, very close family with me. I think also it's a degree of escapism that really helps you cope with it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm a huge film fanatic and I love watching series. So I spent a lot of my time doing that, playing The Sims and just... Yeah,
a fellow nerd. I love you.
So that's really, really how I was able to cope with it. I wouldn't say that I was masking my emotions.
Right. Yeah,
I did have moments where...
Yeah, I was about
to
ask.
And that's important. It's important for you to acknowledge it and not just sweep your emotions under the rug. You have to acknowledge it, go through the motions, but still know and still be optimistic that, okay, I need to fight this and I need to be strong for myself, for my family. And that's how I coped.
Schooling. Dealing with cancer.
It was crazy, Ronnie. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, it was
wild. It was wild because everything really started in my second year. I literally had to be traveling from Barbados to Martinique my family and I wanted a second opinion on the matter. I traveled to Martinique like during the semester. And there was a lot of back and forth because, you know, the drama with going to Martinique, you need such and such.
Yeah, yeah.
You need, you know, various documents. And
right.
It was stressful. But, you know, fortunately for me, I had very supportive lecturers who, they understood my situation. I was very open with them. I said, listen, this is what I have, such and such. I need to go there to get whatever done. And They were very understanding. They allowed me to, if I needed an extension for any assignments, they granted it. And very, very friendly people. You know, I was very fortunate to have them in my life at that time.
And one of the things that I realized, and you know, having to deal with people who have a cancer, they tend not to be vocal about it, because people don't want people to feel sorry for them. They don't want people to baby them, basically. Was that the case with you? Were you quiet? I mean, apart from these discussing with your lectures, were you very open with your circle so that they could understand the emotions that you were going through? Did you make it clear that, hey, don't baby me, I'm still the same person? If you just be supportive, like, I don't know, how are you able to, when dealing with your friends, how are you able to let them know, hey, treat me as the same?
So I have an older sister who's she's very I wouldn't say assertive, but she's very helpful in that regard, in that she already gave a lot of my friends a heads up.
Okay.
Because she knew that I was very much in my head about it and not wanting them to feel bad and feel hopeless. So she gave them a heads up, you know, like, hey, Shana was diagnosed. And so when I came to tell them, they were not as alarmed by it.
Okay, okay.
But I've always been very open with them. I used to literally type out these long messages and so I could broadcast them on WhatsApp to specific people, and I explained everything in detail. I left nothing unsaid because I didn't want them to not have sufficient information and then they're making assumptions and getting in their own heads and becoming emotional about it. I felt that the best approach was to let them know exactly what was happening so that they knew and they were comfortable speaking to me about it as well. So when it comes to people not being open about it, I completely understand. Like you said, they don't want to be pitied. They don't want people to feel sorry for them. But there's a certain strength that comes with being vulnerable. And I say this all the time. It's you're not becoming vulnerable so that you're not no longer helping yourself. You're becoming vulnerable so that people, you allow people in to help you, because this is something that you absolutely cannot go through on your own.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah.
Which you're able to explain to your friends and, you know, basically give them a guideline of how to handle your situations, how to understand your emotions.
Yeah. Which I told them everything, literally, because I did a lot of research on it. I left no stone unturned. Okay, I told them literally everything they needed to know.
Which probably led to you getting inspired to do Virgo versus Cancer. Let's talk about how that started.
My little pet project. I was so excited to do it. I was nervous at first. Sorry about the lighting. I'm using natural light.
That's all right.
I planned out everything from the topics I'm going to be talking about to the logo. I designed it on my own to the format I want my videos to be in. So Virgo versus Cancer is my breast cancer vlog that I host on YouTube, on my YouTube channel. And like I said, I come up with topics and that's the video for the day, or for the week, I should say, because I upload every Sunday. And with that, I'm able to reach so many people, so many St. Lucians, people from other countries. They leave comments and they let me know, you know, I was recently diagnosed and your video really helped me. Or my mother was diagnosed and we're going through this now. And your video, you know, gave me some motivation, gave me some strength to push through. So that's really my intention with the channel. And I'm very content to know that I'm helping people go through whatever they're going through. And by extension, teaching people about what it's like to live with breast cancer.
That's pretty amazing. I'm actually just looking at it right now on YouTube. Pretty cool vibe, and you know, it's amazing. I recognize the background now.
Yes, my flowers.
Yes. That's pretty cool that you're sharing your experience with others, because you know, to keep motivated through this is probably one of the most important things, and to share your story, because you never know who you'll be. It'd be motivating, you know, because like I see, for example, this particular video has over 2,000 views. And let me tell you, that's a lot of people that could be listening and motivating. And I know you're probably not doing it for the money, the monetization, and it's just for the love of it. But what are your expectations from this?
Well, From the channel?
Yeah, from the channel.
I just want people to be informed. I think that cancer, more specifically breast cancer, is too prevalent an issue in our society to not be open about it. Some people still think of it as taboo.
Yeah.
Or that they may not get it.
Right.
Or it is their auntie's cousin's boyfriend who has it, so I'm not going to get it. So, and even in my case, I have no family history of breast cancer.
Oh, wow.
But I got it.
Right.
And that's what I want people to know, that you're not exempt. There's no blueprint to this.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's no way to prevent it either. You could live the healthiest lifestyle on earth, and you could still be afflicted by this. And that's just the idea behind it. To have an open discussion, allow people to come into the world of a breast cancer patient as well, understand mm-hmm. the experiences that we go through, and to be able to empathize with people, because there's a lot that goes into it. If you're able to donate monetarily or donate your time, send them a nice message on Instagram, something. I just want people to be motivated and feel like they can approach cancer patients and be confident about it.
Amazing, amazing. Let me tell you, your place in heaven secure already, my girl. I'm definitely telling you. Oh my goodness, and this is a pretty, pretty good adventure. Let's talk post cancer now. Dietary change, what major changes that have you done to like you said, it's unavoidable sometimes, but what major changes that you've made to your personal diet and your lifestyle, etc.
So fortunately for me, during my chemotherapy treatment, I didn't have food aversions, which is what people eat certain foods and they throw up, or they cannot eat certain foods because of the smells and the tastes, the textures, etc. So during that period, I didn't necessarily have to change my diet, but okay. I did take on a more plant-based diet. Presently, I'm leaning more toward a plant-based diet. I may not be as strict with it, but in the long run, that's what I want to achieve. And it's not because people recommend it. I think to a certain degree, you have to be in tune with your body.
Yeah.
So I notice that certain foods affect me, even more so than prior to starting chemotherapy treatment.
Right,
so
right.
I have to now, again, be in tune with my body to understand that, okay, I need to make certain decisions to ensure that I'm at optimal health,
mm-hmm.
basically. So I may do a little more exercise, more than I did before. I go on walks now, which I hate walking. I absolutely hate walking, but I had to do it because after my surgery, I had a surgery in July to have my lung removed, and I needed to walk as part of that.
I had to ask you about this because reading your bio, this is literally, I had to research it. And I was like, what? That is actually possible? Whoa.
Very possible. It's mind-boggling.
Yes.
With one lung.
Oh, my. But was it difficult after the surgery to recover? Was it like, do you have a significant difference in your breathing? Do you feel significantly different? I don't know. I try to ask questions that I personally want to know, but does it feel different?
So at first, there's a bit of shortness of breath. I still get short of breath if I exert myself too much.
Right.
But again, that's where the walking, the cardio comes
in. Yeah.
It's really to help. What happens is you need the left lung, which is the remaining lung, let's call it that.
Yeah.
The remaining lung now has to compensate for the fact that you no longer have two. So what's supposed to happen eventually is that lung begins to expand a little more so that it can accommodate, breathing for the entire, and whatever functions of the lung for the entire body, okay? So when I breathe normally, I feel normal, but I may get out of breath. Like if I'm speaking quickly or if I'm speaking too much, I may get out of breath. But again, all of that can be remedied with breathing exercises, which after my surgery, I actually had to do a breathing exercise using something, a device called an incentive spirometer, where you exhale slowly and you take like a sharp inhalation and it's supposed to lift this little bar on there. So the idea is the more you do it, the higher the bar would go.
Right.
So you know that the lung is actually expanding and it's able to accommodate more airflow.
Wow. Shan, man, you've been through a lot, and you know, I'm grateful for you being able to share your story via your YouTube channel, your pages, or however you share it. And very good, kudos to you. Again, to the young ladies listening right now, especially as, like I rightfully said, October is celebrated as Breast Cancer Awareness Month. What advice would you give them and signs that they should probably go get themselves checked out?
So I always like to remind people that they have complete agency over their body, over their health, their well-being, their health, whether it be mental and physical. So take charge of it and do your perform your monthly breast self-examinations. There's tons of videos on YouTube. If you don't know how to do it, that can demonstrate how it should be done properly. If you have questions, don't be afraid to seek the help of a specialist. There's a plethora of doctors in St. Lucia. They may not necessarily specialize in the breast, but they have the knowledge and they can help you. You can reach out to, if you're in doubt for some reason, you can also reach out to the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, such as St. Lucia Cancer Society, Faces of Cancer. These are organizations and individuals who have the knowledge, they have the experience, and they've been doing it for a number of years. So you can reach out to them if you have any doubts. And of course, if you or a family member are going through this right now, I sympathize with you, but I also want you to know that you're not alone and you should feel confident and feel free to reach out if you need assistance, whether it be monetarily, emotionally, there's always someone who can help you out. And of course, just be optimistic. True. Be optimistic about your situation.
Shan, give the people your Instagram, give the people your YouTube, give the people whatever way that you want them to get in contact with you, to stay in touch and to, you know, just to follow your journey.
Absolutely. So you can follow me on Instagram. I'm very active. Okay, I'm lying. I'm not very active on there, but I'm moderately active on Instagram. my handle is at Shan_James. That's SHANNE_JAMES. You can follow me on Instagram. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel. It's Shan James on YouTube. Or you can search for Virgo versus Cancer, which is the name of my vlog. And I'm looking forward to hanging from all of you.
Yes, Shan, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Continue to
be. Thank you so much for having
me. Yeah, man, it's very, very, very informative, you know, for me too. And I hope that somebody's listening out there will go out to your vlog and, you know, for whatever other inspiration and to just keep themselves motivated that they will go out and listen to your vlog and watch your vlog, basically. Yes. Thank you so much once again. Of course, Youth Unplugged right here on Radio Caribbean International, brought to you the kind compliments of our sponsor, Bank of St. Lucia, all the bank you need.